damaged goods. Chapter 48. When she apparated back to Hogwarts, her hands were shaking. She felt it now again. Hope. Clinging to it desperately. "You found it," Dominic said with a smile, but instantly tensed when he noticed her demeanour. Silently, she placed the page on the desk, and Dominic and Snape both looked at it, and then their eyes went back to her.
What does this mean?" she asked. "Did I make a potion that can undo, obliviate spells?"
Snape shook his head.
"Impossible. Memories are permanently erased, and nothing can undo it."
She knew that, but she didn't want to let go of any tiny grain of hope in her. Perhaps there was a way to regain her memories? Perhaps there was a way to make her parents remember? "What if we're wrong?" she tried again. "There were many things we didn't think were possibilities, but then we invented something new. How can we be certain it doesn't work?"
"There are many unknowns in potion making," Snape said. "That's the beauty of learning magical arts. But when you erase something, you can't undo it. I told you before, memories are lost forever."
He grabbed an empty scroll.
"Take this scroll. With different spells, I can fill it in with words, or do any number of things with it."
Then he lit it on fire until it burned down.
"But I can't do anything with ashes. There is no spell or potion to bring back something that's gone."
Hermione stared at the pile of ashes on the desk and felt like the hope in her had died similarly. Nothing was going to bring her memories back. It was impossible.
"Where is the rest of the page?"
Snape wondered. And when she reached into her notebook and handed it to him, he read through the list intently.
"Perhaps this could explain why you fell into a coma."
"It tasted too sour," she mumbled, almost more to herself. The professor nodded.
"Of course it did, with the amount of foxweed you put in it."
"I had to, since I needed to off-balance the dried silvertail hair." Snape shook his head.
"All you had to do was half an ounce of dandelion root, and then use a normal amount of foxweed."
She rubbed her eyes, feeling defeated. "Well, it's pointless now anyway, since it doesn't work." Dominic stood up with the recipe in his hands.
"What if this isn't a potion to reverse an obliviate spell?"
"Then why did I write anti-obliviate potion on it?"
"Because it's not the reversing spell. It's shielding against it."
"A shield? Of course. It made so much sense now that she thought about it." The only indication that Snape was intrigued by that idea was that his eyebrows rose slightly.
"Give me that," he snapped,
as he stood and took the paper from Dominic and read through it again with that new information. Erased memories could never be replaced, but perhaps her memories weren't lost at all. Maybe they were simply hidden behind a shield. But why did she not remember anything? Sour. Too sour. "What if the amount of foxweed I use mess it all up?"
Snape sighed in frustration. "Indeed it did, Miss Granger. While the rest of the potion could potentially work to protect your memories, the amount of foxweed would have created a blockage."
"That's why I fell into a coma. It wasn't Malfoy's fault, it was the potion."
"Yes."
Because of a stupid ingredient, she had put herself into a coma and still didn't have her memories.
"Is that why it feels like everything is bubble-wrapped in my brain?" she asked.
"Most likely," he said, as he continued to read the recipe. "The potion would create a safety perimeter around the memories the caster wants to obliviate. But since the amount of foxweed is too high, it locks those memories. It would also explain why you can't remember anything from the last few months, and not just those memories of Mr. Malfoy himself.
Locked? Meaning I could potentially regain them?
Dominic stood up and walked to the backboard. I had that problem with my shield potion once. The shield had turned against me and actually locked me out of using my magic. Only lasted for about 30 minutes, of course, but I had to find a way to unlock it.
He started writing an equation in chalk.
In order to do that, you have to create an unlocking potion that basically undoes the overusage of foxweed. That way, you unlock the memories without destroying them.
Snape got to work and started brewing the reversal potion.
Hermione was staring at the cauldron, trying not to give in to hope. There was a high likelihood this wasn't going to work. As she watched the different ingredients mix, she was praying for her memories back. She wanted to regain that part of her life, even though her friends had filled her in on the most important memories. She wondered what she had felt during it all. She had finally gotten rid of Bellatrix and her dark magic, but all she remembered about it was what Harry and Ginny had told her. Like an entry in a history book, it had no emotional connection to her. Had it changed her? Was she different from the Hermione before? And what about Malfoy? Despite his confession, she didn't quite believe he had drugged her with the love potions this whole time, because it simply didn't make sense. Not after hearing his friends say he was distraught by putting her into a coma. Not after what his father had told her. The Malfoy she remembered was far too proud to have to rely on drugging someone to love him. Did she actually have feelings for him? When Snape was done, he handed her the new potion, and she took the vial and stared at it for a while, wondering if it worked. Wondering what she would find on the other side. Was it good memories? Bad? Why did Malfoy want her to forget everything that had happened between them? The second she drank the potion, she felt a tingling. Like tiny bubbles bursting. She tried to focus on memories, but everything was blurry.
Anything? Dominic asked.
I'm not sure. She closed her eyes. There was an image, but it disappeared before she could get to it.
Focus!
Another image popped up. It looked like Malfoy, though he was older now, but right as the memory became clear, it washed away again. I'm tasting spearmint and ice, she told Dominic, who started writing it down. Spearmint and ice. That was familiar. The taste of it so vivid. It sparked a memory. I love you, Hermione. She heard his voice like a prayer in her mind, and then it hit her like a wave. As if the floodgates had been opened, it rushed through her. Every last memory, every touch, every kiss they had shared. His mark, her scar. Her brain was throbbing with pain. But it all came back. More than the memories, she could feel it all again. Feel the way he kissed her and ignited her soul. See his blue-grey eyes stare at her and only her. Feel the warmth of his skin against hers. The way her heart skipped a beat when he said her name. With every fibre of my being, I'm yours, Hermione. She felt him in her soul. In every breath she took. Only the absence of you taught me the true meaning of loneliness. His deep voice was humming in her veins. I remember. She wanted to scream with joy. I remember you. I remember us. The feeling of euphoria came crashing down with the next memory. You're dying. His pained expression as he grabbed the wand. Draco. Please don't make me forget. She felt the panic in her rise. Find me in another life, Hermione. One where I get more time with you. One where I get to love you longer. All that warmth in her body from a moment ago was taken away. Something in her shattered irreparably as she relived the same heartbreak.
When she opened her eyes, she was on her knees, crying. Dominic and Snape stood still. Breathing felt difficult, but she had to pull herself together.
"I remember," she said as she stood up. "He's dying of the runes."
Snape's dark eyes met hers.
"So, he finally told you? I was urging him to not keep you in the dark any longer."
"No. I performed a diagnostic on him. That's why he obliviated me."
Memories kept falling into place like a row of dominoes, brick by brick rebuilding what she had lost.
"I made the potion after he had obliviated Maureen," Hermione said, stumbling over her own words, barely keeping up with the images in her head. "During the investigation, I was worried he would obliviate me to take important information about the murders away."
Never did she think he would try to erase himself from her memory. Back then, all she had been worried about was getting shut out from the investigation. So worried, she had created a potion, and then ripped her own notes in half in case he was going through her stuff. Thank Merlin she took the potion. But just as she was relieved about her accidental foresight, the fear of losing him returned. Burning in her so hot, she wasn't sure she could breathe.
"He said you tried to save him, but it didn't work because the dark mark keeps pulling on the runes," she said to Snape, her voice trembling. "Now we can remove the mark."
Snape looked at her with warning, because he knew as well as she did that it might be too late. But it couldn't be too late because she could not live with herself, knowing he had died somewhere all alone in agony, as dark magic poisoned him slowly. This whole time she had been so close to finding a potion to not only remove her scar but to save Draco's life. If only she hadn't spent months travelling with him and instead just spent one day on her potion. Just one day. And that's all it took. If only he had told her. If only. If only. If only. The dread in her was festering like a cancer. Draco had been so distraught because Hermione was in a coma, thinking it was his fault. It hadn't been, it was hers, because of one stupid ingredient.
"How do I remove the runes?"
The fear was beating in her relentlessly.
"Tell me how to save him."
Snape walked her through the different spells and potions to be used in rune removal. He also told her about the specific spells he had been using on Draco in the past, keeping the dark magic at bay. She took notes and focused all her energy not to think about the what if. What if he's already dead? What if I'm too late? She had a way to save him, but just like with her memories, if he was gone, she couldn't bring him back. She took Veritaserum and got a kit of medical potions and supplies ready. "When he obliviated me, he said he had about a month left."
"More or less," Snape responded.
That was over a month ago. Her heart was hammering in her chest. She couldn't fall apart. She had to focus. But she was terrified of what she would find once she apparated. The room suddenly felt too small. The air too hot. Her hands were trembling.
"Am I too late, Professor?" she asked with a weak voice, fearing his answer.
Snape hadn't heard from him in a week. Draco's will had been released. The Professor was silent for a moment, and when he spoke again, his voice was uncharacteristically soft.
"He's always been on borrowed time."
When she had the medical kit stacked, she took a steadying breath and Dominic gave her an encouraging nod. Then she apparated. Home. The only sound she could hear was of waves in the distance. She stood in a house by the seaside. Through the window she could see water crashing against a white cliff. Her heartbeat was in her throat. Every second seemed to stretch into eternity because she knew every second counted. She was terrified to move because it was quiet. Too quiet. A deafening silence that suffocated her. Gingerly, she stepped back. Glass bottles were hitting her heel. Empty dirryweed vials and fire whiskey bottles were scattered around the floor. And then she saw him, and she felt her heart stop. She couldn't breathe. Couldn't move. Draco was on the floor, head propped up against the wall. Black veins were spidering against his pale skin, a sign of the progression of the dark magic poisoning his body. And he was so still. So very still. In one hand he held a half-empty fire whiskey bottle. In the other, a picture of her. The sleeves of his shirt were rolled up, a bloody knife next to him. In a last act of defiance, he had cut through the dark mark. Hermione felt an agonizing scream tear through her lungs. She didn't need to cast a diagnostic to know. Draco's heart was no longer beating. Chapter 49. For a moment, the world seemed to have stopped as Hermione stared at Draco's lifeless body, slumped against the wall. She rushed to him, feeling for a pulse, but there was none, and his skin was cold. "No," she said between sobs. Her lungs seized and burned. Her vision was blurry. She had prepared for a panic attack. With shaking hands, she fished the calming draught out of her medical kit. "Breathe," she commanded herself, but all it did was spark a memory of her having a panic attack in Italy. And he had held her in his arms and told her, "Breathe, Granger. I've got you. You're safe." But now he wasn't holding her, wasn't able to tell her everything was going to be okay. And she hadn't been there for him when he was in the agonizing final steps of the dark magic poisoning his blood. Gently, she moved his head to the floor so he was lying flat. If only she could get his heart to start to beat again. Who knew how long it had been? She tried not to look at his face, tried to pretend it was just another patient she was trying to save during the war, and not Draco. Her Draco. She grabbed her wand and used electric surge spells, charging them higher and higher. Each time his body lifted only to collapse lifelessly again.
"Come on! You can't leave me!" she said. And charged again.
Nothing. Her whole body trembled violently as she tried more obscure spells, added adrenaline, magical spike spells, but he remained lifeless. If she was in a healing quadrant, she knew what would happen. Right now, another healer would be coming over to her, putting a hand on her shoulder to say what she could not. Time of death, 7:24. That's when she collapsed on his chest, and the silence against her ear where a heartbeat used to be was the loudest emptiness she'd ever heard.
"Please," she screamed in tears, "don't leave me."
Even all the calming draught in the world couldn't take away the panic in her now. She clung to him in desperation.
"I found you again. I can't lose you."
She was crying violently, feeling the pain rip through her.
"I know how to help you now."
She hugged his chest tighter.
"I know how to save you. Please, don't go where I can't follow."
Everything turned cold. The world seemed to have lost all its warmth at once. She felt herself drowning. Sinking below a surface and she'd never be able to come up again. She screamed his name, hoping if he could hear her on his way to the afterlife, he'd turn around.
"You promised. You promised you'd always come back to me."
She was gasping, but no air came to her burning lungs.
"It wasn't your fault, she sobbed against his lifeless body. I took a potion. You're not the reason I fell into a coma. Please come back to me. The rational healer part of her brain told her there was nothing left to do. Draco Malfoy had died of the runes. They had slowly poisoned his body until his magic could no longer hold the darkness at bay. But her heart couldn't accept it. She wanted him to return to her, not leave her in this world alone. Intent. She thought back to Snape's conversation. What do you want to do? Bring him back to life? No, that wasn't quite right. She wanted more than that. She wanted to save him. Because he deserved it. After everything he had been through, he deserved to live. And she'd do anything to accomplish that. She sat up again and took a deep exhale. The wand back in her hand, she tried to focus on a rare healing spell she had only ever read about. It was experimental, but she had nothing left to lose. They called it the Borrower Heartbeat spell. For one beat, her heart would stop and go to him. A dangerous spell, which was why it was not performed anymore, after a few healers had died in the process. But she needed something stronger than electrical shocks. She called up a diagnostic for Draco and saw his heartbeat in a flat line. She looked at his face, where dark veins were prominent against his pale skin. "I'm going to save you, Draco Malfoy," she said in a steady voice, because this time it was a promise. This time it was an oath. Then she cast the spell. Blinding pain shot through her left arm and chest as she gasped for air, as her heart stopped for one beat and shot to his. For a second, his heart line on the diagnostic beeped, but then flatlined again. "Come on, Draco!" She did the spell again, knocking the wind out of her. His heartbeat increased for a second, only to flatline again. When she did the spell a third time, she closed her eyes and focused on her intent, on saving him, the man she loved with every fibre of her being. She would give all her heartbeats if it meant she could see his eyes open one last time, if she could tell him that she loved him, that this wasn't his fault. If she had just one more moment with him before the world turned dark, it would be worth it. With a deep inhale, she doubled the spell. Pain stabbed through her chest once more, and this time she saw white light shooting in front of her eyes. It took a second for her to orientate herself again as she blinked her eyes open. And then she heard it. The steady beat of his heart. Now it was tears of joy she was crying as she leaned back on his chest and listened to it. The most beautiful sound in the world. But she had no time to bask in glory because hard work was about to begin. She hadn't saved his life yet. She had simply bought him a fighting chance. With all her supplies, it looked like she was in a field hospital. First, she began with all the spells Snape used on Draco to minimise the poison from the dark magic on him. Hermione worked with meticulous precision. She healed the cut he had made through his dark mark, injected him with blood replenishing potion as well as a magical cleansing potion. Hours went by before he was stable enough that she could remove the dark mark. She had never injected her potion, but hoped it had the same effect. She found a good vein in his arm and injected the grey fluid. His heart pumped it through his body, and she waited, holding his wrist and staring at the skull and snake. The mark that had haunted him ever since he had gotten it. He had only been a boy, vying for his father's approval. While she had been working with Harry and Ron to stop Voldemort, Draco had been all alone, getting tortured and turned into a weapon. An executioner, at only 16 years old. But he wasn't alone. Not anymore. Like ink in water, the dark mark dissolved bit by bit. She wiped happy tears from her eyes. "I wish you could see this right now," she said. "You're finally free of it." Her fingers traced the bare skin on his arm that still felt colder than it should. She'd removed the dark mark, but the runes were continuing to poison him. His veins were still black. She followed Snape's instructions carefully. Every rune had to be removed individually, using Egyptian potions and dark art counterspells. Each time she had to re-stabilise him and make sure his magical levels were holding up. It was tedious work that gave no room for error. She hadn't noticed how long she'd been working on him until the sun began to set and she removed the last rune. Wiping sweat from her forehead, she looked at his diagnostics. The dark mark was slowly leaving him. She injected more magical replenishing potions until the dark veins were gone. Then she levitated him to the bed and sat next to him, watching the sunset and holding his hand. She talked to him about the beautiful colour of the water, about the scar removal potion, all while staring at his diagnostics, making sure his heart was still beating, checking his brain function and ensuring that she got all of the dark magic out. When he had stabilised enough, she sent a scroll to Snape. He was going to open a portal for her, since she couldn't apparate him in this condition. The second they arrived in the healing quadrant, Snape took charge of Draco's care, but Hermione didn't leave his side. She watched wordlessly as Snape sent different charms and spells. Through it all, she just held Draco's hand and looked at his face. It was close to midnight when Snape was done with his work.
"You should get some rest, Miss Granger," he said to her. "We will let you know when he wakes up, but I don't anticipate that to happen tonight."
"It's fine. I'll wait here."
"It's a miracle he survived."
"I just had a good teacher," she replied with a smile. Snape's lip quirked, but didn't give form to a smile in response.
"I'm afraid this was all you, Miss Granger."
Hermione was exhausted, to the bone, emotionally and physically. But every time she was about to drift off in the chair next to Draco, she jolted back awake and cast a diagnostic in panic. Terrified to see dark magic creep back in again. Terrified she might have missed something. When the first sun rays came up, she was still sitting in the same spot. A healer brought her water and food, but she wasn't hungry. "His vitals are good, miss," the healer said to her. "You can rest now." She couldn't. Not until he opened his eyes. Not until she could tell him that she loved him again. At some point, her friends were going to show up, but she wasn't ready for that yet, because she needed to hold it together for a little while longer. And she knew once she even thought of what happened in that house, she'd fall apart. The exhaustion was gnawing at her, waiting for her to allow herself to let it all crash down. Hours went by. People were moving around, but it all felt like background noise. Her hand was holding his. Her fingers pressed on the inside of his wrist, feeling his pulse. It was the most comforting feeling in the world. She felt it in her veins, that steady drum of his heartbeat. She saw the sun break through the clouds, and then she sensed it in her heart before she had to look. His eyes opened. For a moment, all she could do was stare into those blue-grey eyes, scared that if she was to move, it might be nothing but a dream. He smiled.
"I was hoping it would be your face I'd see on the other side."
Hearing his voice again made her choke up, and then she realised what he was saying. She moved closer to him. "This isn't the afterlife, Draco." He was still smiling as his fingers moved into her hair.
"No. What is it you'd call it then, darling?"
Her tears were hitting his shirt.
a second chance at life. Because I didn't let you die. You didn't die, Draco. His eyes narrowed and his smile faltered in disbelief. You're back at Hogwarts, she continued. And I remember. I remember everything. He let go of her.
That's impossible.
His eyes were blinking rapidly as if he was making sure this wasn't an illusion. She shook her head and held his hand even tighter. He still looked as if he didn't believe her to be real, merely a phantom of his imagination. I held you to your promise, she said.
What promise is that?
That you'd always come back to me. His eyes flickered with emotion, and for the first time he looked around. If he thought this was the afterlife, he surely wouldn't have picked the healing quadrant at Hogwarts. He stared at the equipment all around him, and that look of confusion on his face returned. And then his eyes shot to her with something like awe and shock. He pulled her closer, his fingers tracing her face.
Is this a dream?
His voice was but a breath. She shook her head, fighting tears as she fell into his arms and he hugged her tightly against his chest.
Hermione,
he whispered into her hair, as his muscles tightened around her.
I was so worried about you. I don't know what I did wrong with the spell, and I'm so sorry.
She lifted her head, placing her hand on his face. His face that was his again, without dark veins. It wasn't your fault I fell into a coma. I took a potion against obliviate spells and miscalculated the ingredients.
I shouldn't have obliviated you. I only wanted to protect you, wanted better for you.
She swallowed hard, thinking back to the moment at the house on the seaside when she had almost lost him. Had she not taken the potion all those months ago, he would have died all alone. I'd rather live with the grief of losing you than miss the memory of you, she said, her voice breaking. Tears began to well in his eyes and he nodded silently.
Forgive me.
She leaned in and kissed him and everything around them fell away as she savoured that feeling of having him back because she wasn't sure she'd survive a world without him.
I never thought I'd see you again, he said when they broke the kiss. I was sure it was the end. Everything went dark.
The image of him slumped against the wall came back, and she had to swallow tears away. He had died. His heart had stopped beating. Luckily, it hadn't been long enough for her to not be able to bring him back. I know you thought that. She bit her lips into a tight line. I got your will.
Well, nothing changes there. I still want you to have it.
Even speaking about his death that had come so close made her stomach flip. Since you're alive, you can keep it. His demeanour darkened, and he sighed.
Hermione, you know it's only a matter of time.
He hadn't realised she had saved him for good. How could he? For years he thought it was impossible. No, Draco. I told you I'd save you, and I held my promise. His eyebrows knitted together, and then she moved his shirt to show him the absence of the runes. When his eyes fell on naked skin, he almost jumped up, grabbing his shirt and staring at his chest in disbelief. He looked up at her.
That's impossible. The runes can't be removed as long as I have the dark mark.
She smiled. That's right. She took his hand and stretched his arm. He went so still she wasn't sure he was still breathing. Slowly she turned his arm and rolled up the sleeve of his shirt. Draco's eyes remained locked on hers, not daring to look down. Fearing to have that glimmer of hope taken away from him if he did. She nodded at him as if to say it was safe to look, and then silver eyes slid down ever so slightly until they went to his arm.
his hands balled into fists, and his arms began to tremble, but otherwise he remained rigid. The symbol of years of torture and oppression were finally gone. He was free. Silent tears rolled down his cheeks. His teeth were biting together hard as he continued to stare at the arm that no longer bore the mark. He looked back up at her.
How?
Was all he asked, as if he still didn't quite believe it. She held her arm next to his, showing naked skin. Turns out the potion I was working on the entire time to get rid of my scar ended up saving your life. His tears mixed with laughs, and it was the most carefree laugh she'd ever heard from him. A laugh she'd never thought she'd see on him. Because life had been too cruel. Pain had cut too deep. Wounds had been too plentiful. But here they were, laughing tears of joy. Just surviving wasn't good enough anymore. She wanted more. She wanted them to live. He placed a kiss on her arm where the scar used to be. Then he pulled her closer until she was inches away from him. His hand was on the side of her neck, fingers balancing on her pulse point, and she stared into his eyes that were now the colour of glaciers. Piercing blue with light shades of grey. She was certain it was the most beautiful colour she'd ever seen.
Hermione,
he whispered against her lips in awe. His voice was raw with emotion. Instead of saying anything else, he pulled her into a kiss. Soft and gentle at first, but then it grew more desperate. Words weren't enough. A million I love yous couldn't convey how they felt. They couldn't express the fear of losing the other they both had experienced, and couldn't possibly communicate the relief of holding each other now. He rested his forehead against hers. His hands were in her hair. Hermione held on to him, never wanting to let go, feeling the warmth of his skin.
"I can't lose you," she whispered. "Anything else, but not you."
His fingers wrapped gently around her curls.
"You could never lose me. Even when everything went dark, I told the stars about you."
When his lips found hers again, she realised that finally the world around her was no longer burning. Chapter 50. Hermione was fidgeting with her coat, nervously adjusting it as they stood in front of the small house in the middle of the woods. The snow was knee-deep, and although it was the middle of the day, the sun hadn't come up. Draco grinned at her.
"There's no need to be nervous."
Easy for him to say. He was never going to meet her parents.
"I'm not nervous." A blatant lie. He chuckled.
"She's going to love you."
That only made it worse, because what if she didn't?
"Ready?"
he asked.
"Or would you like to readjust your coat again?"
She shot him an angry look that made the smirk on his face only grow bigger. He put an arm around her and placed a kiss on top of her head.
"Trust me, she is beyond excited to meet you,"
he reassured. Then he knocked on the door. Narcissa looked just like Hermione had remembered. She was wearing a thick wool sweater, and her white and black hair was elegantly pinned up.
"Merry Christmas, Mother," Draco said.
But Narcissa didn't pay any attention to him. She just stared at Hermione, and for a moment she was terrified of what this meant. Was she appalled by the Muggle-born witch dating her only son? Tears began to well in Narcissa's eyes, and she pulled Hermione into a hug and held her tightly.
"Thank you," she whispered. "Thank you for saving him."
Draco was quiet, as if he didn't want to interrupt the moment. When Narcissa let her go, she took Hermione's face into her hands.
"Let me get a good look at you," she said, tears rolling down her cheeks. "What a stunning witch you have become. I'm so glad Draco finally brought you over. I was beginning to think he was hiding you from me. But where are my manners? Come inside. It's freezing out here.
The small hut was the opposite to Malfoy Manor. It was cosy with lots of warm light, smelling of firewood and candied apples. Even in the small space, Narcissa had managed to decorate everything elegantly. While Draco brought their luggage inside, Narcissa gave Hermione a tour of the house, which ended in the kitchen. Before Hermione could say anything, she had a drink in her hand.
"A fire whiskey, with apple cider and cinnamon," Narcissa said as she took a sip from her drink. "I can't cook for the life of me, but at least I know how to make good drinks."
Hermione chuckled and took a sip, which was surprisingly delicious.
"Don't worry," Narcissa said. "I have ordered dinner. I'm not going to subject you to my cooking."
Unlike Muggle delivery services, the food just magically arrived on the table at 8 p.m. It was a feast, and way too much for the three of them. Narcissa asked her about her potion work and was especially fascinated by her work to remove the dark mark. They laughed and drank and ate too much food, and Hermione was surprised how easy Narcissa was to talk to.
"This has been delicious, Mrs. Malfoy," Hermione said. "Please call me Narcissa. I always wanted to have a daughter, and I feel like you're already part of the family."
Hermione swallowed, feeling like it struck a nerve because her own parents were never going to remember her. There was never going to be a Christmas with them. After dinner, Narcissa brought a family album over and showed Hermione baby pictures of Draco.
"I don't think this is necessary," he sighed.
"Oh, but it is," Hermione grinned, staring at a picture of a tiny Draco taking his first steps.
"Here he is casting his first spell," Narcissa said, pointing at the next picture.
When it moved, it showed Draco's spell landing back on him and he screamed.
"Luckily, his spell work has improved since then."
They both giggled. Draco got up with a groan.
"I'm not drunk enough for this."
Narcissa proudly showed every picture she had of Draco, and Hermione noticed there was not a single one of Lucius. The only place where Hermione had seen a picture of Narcissa's husband was on her nightstand in the bedroom. When Narcissa closed the book, she stared at it for a moment, as if she was contemplating what to say next.
"I'm sure you wonder about Draco's father," she said finally. "I heard you went to see him."
"I did." She opened the medallion of her necklace and showed a picture of a young her and Lucius.
"We were so in love, and never in my life did I think anything could take him away from me."
The smile on her faltered, and she clasped the necklace shut.
"It started slowly, the obsession with pure blood origin," she continued. "When we met, he never talked about blood purity. Over the years, that became a bigger part of his life. Then, when Voldemort returned, it was all he could ever talk about."
The colour from her face seemed to have drained.
"It is strange to me. It's as if he died. My Lucius no longer exists. He died before the war, before Voldemort. Now someone who looks like him sits in a high-security prison. But it's not him. It's not my Lucius, merely an imposter."
Hermione was quietly watching as Narcissa brought the glass of champagne to her lips, eyes distant.
"Sometimes I wished he had died," she whispered, and then took a long sip. "It would have been better than watching him turn into a monster I don't recognise. I should have left him earlier, but I was too blinded by my love for him. When he handed Draco over to Voldemort..."
She shook her head, trailing off.
"Enough with my rambling."
Through the window, they watched Draco grabbing firewood at the shed outside. Narcissa took Hermione's hand and squeezed it.
"I have never seen him happier than he's been with you. When he first told me about you, He was very secretive. You know how he is.
Oh, yes.
But I knew. The way his eyes sparkled when he said your name. I knew he was in love before he even had to say a word. In fact, I kept saying, you love this girl. And he'd say,
don't be ridiculous, Mother,
Narcissa said in a deep voice, pretending to be her son. The imitation was spot on. Hermione had to fight to keep the champagne from coming out of her nose. Outside in the snow, Draco stood in front of a hippogriff. He bowed his head before approaching the massive creature.
Tibu is rather fond of Draco, Narcissa said. When I was little, we had several hippogriffs on our farm.
Hermione remembered Draco's first encounter with the creature. In Care of Magical Creatures class, Draco was not really well accustomed to hippogriffs. Narcissa scoffed.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt it.
But now the hippogriff was nudging Draco, letting him pet his face. For a moment, Hermione realised how close they had come to never seeing this moment play out. Only a few more minutes and Draco would have not made it. A few more minutes and he would have died all alone in the house by the seaside. The holidays were spent with lots of laughter, food and drinks. Hermione cast daily diagnostics and Draco let her. She needed to see it, as a reminder that he was all right, that the dark magic was gone. Maybe one day she would no longer rely on the visual. Every time she cast it, she held her breath for a second, fearing to see dark magic back in his veins, although it was impossible. Draco's road to recovery was still long. His magic hadn't fully returned, and she was getting anxious it might never. Snape had said that it was a possibility. Too much of his own magic had been corrupted and withered under the constant assault of dark magic from the runes and the dark mark. When he was setting the table for breakfast, she noticed the tremor in his hand. He instantly clamped it into a fist as their eyes met.
It's nothing, he assured her with a smile and kissed her.
On New Year's, he took her for a ride on Tibu, and one of his favourite spots on the top of the mountain. The stars looked so close, Hermione was sure she could touch them. It was there, in the snow, that Draco got on one knee, and Hermione felt her heart hammering in her chest. The ring in a dark green velvet box sparkled so bright, she was certain it wasn't a regular diamond. It seemed to be chipped from a star itself.
I didn't know I was lost until I found you, he said.
She was so nervous, so emotional she could barely hear what he was saying. She just saw his lips moving and expectant blue-grey eyes staring up at her.
Hermione Granger, will you do me the exceptional honour of marrying me?
The stars were their witness when she said yes and fell into his arms. Under tears, she protested the diamond was far too large.
It's from my mother's collection, he informed her. It's been in the family for generations.
Back in England, Snape didn't have good news. Draco's magic was never going to fully return. The damage had been too severe. She was fighting tears.
What about the tremors? In his right hand?
The hand where his dark mark had been. Snape laced his fingers together on the desk.
We will have to manage it with different potions, but it will remain.
When they left the professor's office, she quickly wiped away tears with the sleeve of her robes, but Draco had already noticed and pulled her into his arms.
Darling, it's fine, he assured.
It's not. If I had developed my potion quicker, you would still have your magic.
He lifted her head with his thumb until their eyes met.
It doesn't matter to me. I don't need my magic anymore. I have you.
He tugged a curl behind her ear.
Besides, all my life my magic was tied to violence, and I'm tired of violence. Perhaps it's a good thing Merlin took it away from me. Perhaps I never deserved the gift of magic.
No, Draco, I...
But he silenced her protest with a kiss. 7 months later.
You're staring, she admonished Draco through the mirror as he leaned against the doorframe dressed in his tux.
Last I checked, it wasn't a crime to admire one's future wife.
He walked up to her, wrapped an arm around her waist and pulled her against him, kissing her neck. She chuckled, feeling his breath tickle her skin.
Perhaps not, but you are making us late.
His hand wandered over the silk of her dress.
They'll understand.
It's a wedding, not a party.
He hummed absently, slowly bringing his fingers to the slit of her dress until he touched bare skin. She grabbed his hand and stopped him.
Draco Malfoy, I am being serious.
He chuckled.
My full name. I must be in trouble then.
Turning around, she kissed him.
We both will be if you continue to make us late.
I'm ready. I even left a few minutes to spare.
Hopefully. What you have in mind will take more than a few minutes.
Eyes glinted with wickedness.
Why, yes, Miss Granger.
Precisely, and we don't have that kind of time now. So let me get ready in peace and we'll leave on time.
When they got to the wedding venue, Draco's posture changed. He was getting more comfortable around her friends, but he and Harry were never going to be best friends. He and Ron even less so. To everyone's surprise, Draco and Ginny had developed a close friendship, although it was mostly based on sarcastic insults and snarky comments. Nobody could quite understand their unique relationship.
Ah, Weaselette,
Draco said, with a sharp grin when he spotted her after the wedding.
You look lovely.
Ginny quirked an eyebrow. Don't go soft on me now, Ferret.
Not to worry. That was my first and only compliment to you. No, perhaps I do have another. Today might have demonstrated the single smartest move Potter ever made. Granted, the bar was rather low to begin with.
Insulting my husband is not a form of flattery.
I must apologise if I ever gave you the impression I would refrain from insulting your husband.
Criticise him if you must, but at least he's not punching out of his league like a certain white-haired wizard. That earned her a laugh.
Touché, Weaselette. Touché.
It's Weasley Potter to you now.
I can safely say I will never call you that.
They'd go back and forth like this for ages, neither backing down. Hermione wasn't sure she quite understood their dynamic, but it worked for them. Harry walked over and she gave him a big hug and congratulated him. It was a beautiful summer's day, and their engagement party seemed like a lifetime ago. No longer was the darkness hanging over her and Draco like it had then. No longer was she scared of the night. Autumn, 1 year later. It was a perfect late September day. The sun was still warm, but the air was starting to be crisper. Hermione stood in front of the mirror, looking at herself in the white dress.
Ready to do this?
Harry asked, with that soft, nervous demeanour that she loved about him. She had asked him to walk her down the aisle, since her father did not remember she existed. Her hair, makeup, and the dress itself had all been courtesy of Pansy. There was nothing left to do but leave the room, walk out of the manor, and onto the front lawn where everyone was waiting.
I didn't think I'd be this nervous, Hermione said, feeling her hands slightly trembling.
It wasn't a bad feeling, quite the opposite, but for the first time it really sunk in. She was going to marry Draco Malfoy.
Jitters are quite normal, Harry assured. Trust me, I was a mess on my wedding day.
How is he?
Malfoy?
She nodded.
He keeps fixing his tie every few seconds and fusses with his cuffs. So I'm assuming he's a bit nervous as well.
Narcissa was there. Draco had worked hard on getting her out of exile. She decided she wanted to stay in the hut in Sweden, but she was now able to travel freely and come back to England whenever she wanted. Harry had a lot to do with that. As part of the top aurors at the Ministry, he had pleaded her case for added protection and to hunt down anyone who was wishing her harm. Hermione pictured Draco at the end of the aisle, Theo and Blaise next to him. She was about to get married. Married? She exhaled.
"Miney," Harry said softly, and when she looked up at him, he smiled at her. "I know me and Malfoy have had our issues, but I couldn't be more thrilled for you. The both of you. I see how he adores you. Those stone-cold features seem to melt for you only."
She bit her lips together nervously.
"When I saw Ginny walk down the aisle, all the jitters were gone. I just couldn't wait to make her my wife."
Then he offered her his arm.
"Ready?"
She was. More than ready. When they walked out of the manor, she saw the wedding party in the distance, and all the guests got up. Her heart was hammering in her chest, her arm tightening on Harry's. Her hand held onto the bouquet for dear life. But then her eyes connected with Draco's, and everything else fell away. He stared at her with awe, as if she was the only person he could see, as if he had been looking for her for ages and finally found her. Hermione barely noticed anything around her as her hands found Draco's. Months of planning, mostly from Pansy, and Hermione couldn't say what the groomsmen were wearing, what the colours of the flower arrangements were, what the minister said as he married them. But she could recall the exact shade of blue-grey of Draco's eyes, the soft smile on his lips, the emotion in his voice. Silver lights danced between their hands to make the magical binding official. But right then she realised she didn't need a piece of paper to tell her what her heart had known all along. That he was hers. Her home. Her heart. Her forever. As the sun set, they had their first dance as husband and wife under a sea of floating candles. "Are we one of those soppy couples who ignore anyone else around them?" she asked. He smirked.
"Superior is the term you're looking for."
"How very Slytherin of you."
"Must I remind you, darling, you're one as well?"
She had one surprise left for him. In the months since she'd removed his runes, he had talked about how he despised the Malfoy name, since it was forever connected to his father. But he also hated the Black name because of Bellatrix. He had long concluded that the mere blood in his veins was rotten. "I've made a decision," she said, as Draco moved her elegantly across the dance floor. "I'm going to take your name." It was the first time she'd ever seen him truly miss a step. He stumbled, stepping on her foot but recovering quickly. His face had gotten a shade paler.
"We'll talk about it."
"Hermione Granger Malfoy," she said the name out loud and felt him almost cringe against her. "I think it has a ring to it. No hyphen. I'll keep my maiden name as a middle name." He was silent. "I want to take your name," she said again.
"It's not your burden to try to clean up the Malfoy name."
"That's not why I'm doing it. I want your name because I want you. Because I love you. And it's your name, not just your father's." Her dark mark removal potion was patented. She opened the Dark Arts Recovery Centre, where she specialised in new potions for victims of dark arts. Her face plastered magazine covers and newspapers with her new inventions. Hermione Malfoy fighting dark arts one spell at a time. Dominic's shield potion turned out to be one of the most significant inventions of recent wizarding history. He married Blaise in a beautiful ceremony in Italy. Pansy and Theo were the last of their friends to get married. They had been engaged for years, but Pansy wanted the wedding to be spectacular and needed time to properly plan it. As expected, their wedding was over the top, even for a billionaire couple. The 3-day event took place on a private island.
Hermione lobbied the Ministry to make Obliviate spells an unforgivable. It took years, but the Ministry finally agreed. It was personal to her, not only because Draco had obliviated her all those years ago, but because she had done the same to her parents. One year, Draco took her to Australia, where her parents were working as dentists. Nervously, Hermione was standing in front of their office, waiting for them to walk out. Over the years, she had made a point to visit them every so often, but she never talked to them, only ever observed them from afar. They usually left for a lunch break together around noon. When her parents walked out, her throat constricted. Her mother was pulling sunglasses out of her bag. Her father had a backpack slung on one shoulder.
"You sure you want to do this?" Draco asked.
She nodded. This was as close as she'd ever come to introducing her husband to her parents. She walked up to them, these people who no longer recognised her.
Excuse me, she said,
and they turned their attention to her. For a split second she hoped they would pull her into their arms and tell her how much they'd missed her. But their eyes were vacant. Friendly smiles that were reserved for strangers, not their only daughter. A daughter they didn't remember they had. She had come up with a lie beforehand, a simple question that would allow for some small talk.
"Me and my husband are thinking of moving to the area. Is this a safe neighbourhood?"
Her father nodded.
"Oh yes, wonderful neighbourhood. You will love it here. Sorry, I didn't catch your name."
"Hermione Malfoy."
"Lovely to meet you," he said,
and shook her hand before turning to her husband.
"And you are?"
"Draco Malfoy, sir. It's a pleasure to meet both of you."
He said it in earnest as he met her in-laws for the first time. Hermione fought tears as her husband finally shook her parents' hands, but they would never know the significance of the moment. Her mother looked at her closely.
"Have we met before? You look so familiar."
Draco's hand on her tightened, and she wasn't sure how she didn't break down, how she didn't collapse under the weight of her own mistakes that led to this. She swallowed hard and mustered a smile.
"I don't believe we have."
When they left the small street in Sydney, Draco pulled her against his chest and she allowed herself to sob, to mourn that her parents would never remember her. Hermione wanted Draco to write a book about his life, to take back the narrative that had been formed about him over the years, but he declined. He was active in the defence against the dark arts scene and spearheaded many programmes specialising in recovery from dark arts. He did so behind the scenes, never attaching his name to anything if he didn't have to. They had one daughter, Celeste, the name reminding them of the stars. She had the hair and eye colour from her father, but the complexion from Hermione. When her hair grew longer, it turned just as curly as hers. Draco's protectiveness had translated just as much, if not more, to their daughter. He was fiercely protective and enamoured with Celeste. He would take hours teaching her spells and telling her stories. He was particularly proud when she got sorted into Slytherin. Her best friends were a Hufflepuff boy, a Gryffindor girl, and Carmen, Theo and Pansy's daughter.
"Thank you for coming on such short notice, Mr. and Mrs. Malfoy,"
the new Hogwarts headmaster said as they sat in front of her desk.
"Unfortunately, Celeste has cast a spell on another student. As you're both aware, as fine former students of this school, such behaviour is unacceptable."
"Which spell?" Draco asked with curiosity, and Hermione kicked him under the desk.
"Pardon me," the headmaster asked. "Apologies. My husband remains academically curious. Of course we are concerned with Celeste's behaviour. We will address the matter immediately."
The headmaster's eyes stared warily on Draco.
"The only reason your daughter isn't being expelled is because the two of you are legacy students."
"Of course," Hermione nodded. When they left the office, they saw Celeste sitting on a bench, arms crossed over her chest.
"What spell did you use?" was Draco's only question.
Their daughter had impressive magic, and since she was trained by him in dueling and dark arts, she was wielding it masterfully. Hermione had been instrumental in guiding her potion work and made sure she attended Snape's classes. Celeste shrugged.
"Simple gagging spell? It's not like it's permanent."
"Are you serious?" Hermione asked her husband. "That's what you're focusing on."
He smirked innocently.
"Simply curious."
"What were you thinking?"
Hermione admonished their daughter. "You know the rules." Celeste's silver eye is narrowed in her.
"I was thinking that you got expelled from Gryffindor for casting spells on several students. Like mother, like daughter, I guess."
"That was different," Hermione shot back.
Draco had his hands elegantly in his pockets.
"Was it, darling?"
he asked with a cocky grin.
"I had a reason."
Celeste jumped up.
"So did I. You were bad-mouthing Dad."
That caught Hermione's attention. "What were they saying?"
"That he's weak and doesn't have any magic anymore. That he's hiding behind the smartest witch of our generation because he's powerless and that he used you to glean his name."
Hermione felt her blood boil.
"They what?"
Each year, Draco had lost more of his magic. They had gone to different clinics across the globe, but nothing seemed to stop it. The runes had corrupted too much of his magic. He was going to live a long life, but would most likely lose most, if not all, of his magic. To her surprise, Draco laughed. Hermione stared at him speechlessly. What was possibly funny about this? He ran a hand through his hair.
"From Savus Moors to Weakling. I have to admit I never saw that coming. Kind of a refreshing change of pace, if you ask me. Let them talk. I'm not concerned, and neither should you be. Your mother is right about one thing. This wasn't smart. You're a Slytherin. What's rule number 5?
Celeste sighed.
"It doesn't matter what you do as long as you don't get caught."
Draco nodded.
"Precisely. May I suggest hexing them in their sleep next time?"
Draco still had enough magic to perform simple spells and to apparate, but at age 46, all his magic was gone. He assured her over and over that it didn't bother him, but she saw him in his study every once in a while, taking his wand and whispering the simplest spells only for nothing to happen. One of the most powerful wizards she'd ever known, and he couldn't even make a scroll disappear anymore. He sighed in frustration, and that only worsened the tremor in his hand. Hermione felt devastated for him, because all his life he had looked at his magic as evil, turning against him, corrupting him. Once he was finally free of the Imperius spell and the dark magic, his magic left him. He'd never get to experience his own powers without darkness tied to it. When he turned, noticing her by the door, he stiffened.
I read about another experimental treatment in Dubai, she said, stumbling over her words.
We've been over this.
His words were sharp with irritation.
You can't right every wrong in the world.
Perhaps not, but this is you we're talking about.
Despite her best efforts, she started sobbing, and his demeanour softened instantly.
Your magic is so beautiful. I don't think I ever got to tell you that. I've never seen anyone wield it so poetically yet so fiercely at the same time.
His Patronus, his ice magic, his impressive dueling skills. It was all gone. He pulled her into a hug, strong arms fastening around her.
I know there must be a way, she continued against his chest. Something I can do to save your magic.
He cupped her face in his hands, his eyes finding hers.
Hermione, how many ways do you feel you must save me? I am here, breathing because of you. If I had the choice, I'd sacrifice all my magic for you, again and again. Yes, I miss my powers, but darling, you and Celeste are my whole world. I shouldn't even be standing here. Was it not for you, I'd be watching you through my portrait, wishing you nothing but happiness.
He leaned his forehead against hers, hands softly brushing her hair.
I thank Merlin every day for giving me more time with you, because I know even eternity won't be long enough to love you.
His lips found hers, and even all these years later, his kisses seared through her soul in a way like nothing else ever did. Not like that. Not like him.